Good morning. It's good to see everyone out. We welcome you, whether you're a member here or a guest today, or if you're in the room or joining us online, we want to welcome you. I went for a little bit yesterday, was able to watch Callan give his speech. There's something, for me, pretty intimidating to sit in a room with a bunch of, I don't really know, 10 to 13-year-olds, 14-year-olds, and think, oh, that's how you do it. That's what I should do. That's how very humbling, I guess, is the right word, is to watch those kids. This morning we are going to start a new series, and we're going to talk about resurrection, and that's sort of what we all want to talk about this morning. We want to talk about the resurrection of Jesus. We want to talk about the coming resurrection, and just that word, resurrection, it breathes life into us. It's such a joyful word and an idea to think about resurrection. And we're going to celebrate and think about resurrection throughout this month, or at least the next three lessons or so. But before we do that, I think we need to talk about death, because without death, there is no resurrection. We cannot celebrate the joy of resurrection without first lamenting the pain of death. And I want to dwell on that just for a few minutes. It's not a fun thought, and we don't want to dwell on that thought, but the fact that we don't want to talk about it, and the fact that we don't want to dwell on it very long, is all the more reason that we should force ourselves to do just that, to just sit with the thought for a moment that we cannot celebrate the joy of resurrection without first lamenting the pain of death. And in our modern world, we're not very good at lament. In fact, I would go so far to say for many of us in our modern world, we've lost the ability to lament. We've lost both the words and the will to lament. We just want to celebrate. Just tell me the good news. Tell me what to be happy about. Tell me the silver lining. But our modern inability to lament in and of itself is lamentable. We just want the resurrection of Sunday. We don't want that cross from Friday. But when you minimize death, when you minimize lament, and you minimize grief, what you end up doing is you also minimize resurrection. You minimize celebration. Well, what are we celebrating? And really, if we don't let that sink in, how bad death is, just how lamentable death is, then we'll never understand how joyous resurrection is. We won't understand the good news unless we first understand the bad news. But we try so hard in our modern world to push away those negative things as much as possible. We try to distract ourselves from grief and death. We deny and we delay and we disguise death. We deny it. And sometimes we say, well, it's not really that bad. We put a positive spin on everything. We say, that probably won't happen to me. We delay death. And thankfully, through medical advancements, we can delay for years. But along sometimes with that delay comes a delay of discussion. And it's sort of out of sight, out of mind. And we tell ourselves that a death at 100 years is somehow less tragic than a death at 20, but it's really just as tragic that anyone has to die at any age. We aren't able to cure death. We can't prevent ourselves from death indefinitely, but we can, as I said, delay it. And when it comes to that, it brings on a delay of discussion, and we don't want to talk about it. We even disguise death. We don't even want to say that a person has died. We don't like to use that word because it's so blunt and it's so sharp and it's so hard to even wrap our minds around that. So we give ourselves euphemisms to say, we say they passed on or they're no longer with us, because even the word itself is just too hard to say. But again, as we've said probably 10 times already, we cannot celebrate the joy of resurrection without first lamenting the pain of death. We have to recognize just how bad death is. We have to allow ourselves to feel that. But listen, I've been with way too many families, way too many gravesides, way, way too many funerals. And for many of us, our faith doesn't have words for grief. We haven't left room in our faith for grief. People tell me all the time, I feel like I'm being selfish because I'm grieving. Nothing could be farther from the truth. It's not selfish to grieve. It's incredibly natural to grieve. Christianity, our faith in Christianity, gives us room to feel just how devastating grief and death are. And without understanding how devastating death and grief are, we will never understand how joyous and wonderful resurrection really is, because that's what we have to look forward to, right? We're looking forward to resurrection, to the death of death, to the end of death, and that's going to be our text this morning. It's a promise that God made through the prophet Isaiah 700 years before Jesus about the death of death. So in Isaiah 25, verse 1, it says, O Lord, you are my God. I will exalt you. I will praise your name, for you have done wonderful things, plans formed of old, faithful and sure. For you have made the city a heap, the fortified city a ruin. The foreigner's palace is a city no more. It will never be rebuilt. Therefore, strong peoples will glorify you. Cities of ruthless nations will fear you. Isaiah says God's promises are faithful and sure. That you will bring down, God, the ruthless. You will bring down the oppressor. And now Isaiah here is prophesying right on the precipice of death and destruction for the Jewish people. In fact, Isaiah has a whole lot of negative things to say, and there are very few people that really want to listen to those negative things. Isaiah says that death and destruction and judgment are coming. But in the end, God will take care of his people. God will bless his people more than you can possibly imagine. So what we might have to go through for a little while is going to be difficult and hard, and there are going to be many that are going to die. But on the other side are God's promises for you, and his promises are faithful and sure. And every oppressor, every ruthless nation, no matter how big or bad they seem, God is going to bring them down. And again, in order for you to embrace the joy of this promise, you have to understand the weight of the oppression, the weight of the ruthless ones, just how scary, just how bad, how devastating these people are. The Assyrians at this time, the Babylonians, the Egyptians, and today all of the empires and nations and threats that we still face. Then you have what Isaiah says, I trust in you, O Lord. You are my God. I trust in you. And again, that's what we're talking about this morning. When we talk about resurrection, we're not talking about pie in the sky. We're not trying to just put a positive spin on everything, or we're talking about how everything has a silver lining and things aren't as bad as they seem. No, things are probably worse than they seem. But God is better than you can possibly imagine. And his promises are better than you can possibly imagine. So learn to trust him. Trust him through the storm, because on the other side are God's promises. Verse 4 says, For you have been a stronghold to the poor, a stronghold to the needy in his distress, a shelter from the storm and a shade from the heat. For the breath of the ruthless is like a storm against a wall, like a heat in a dry place. You subdue the noise of the foreigners as heat by the shade of a cloud, so the song of the ruthless is put down. It says the ruthless and the oppressive are like a storm banging against a wall. And you've probably felt that, or you can imagine what that feels like. You've seen pictures of a strong wind or a tornado just pounding on something. That's how the ruthless are. Sometimes that's how life is, right? Just pounds us and pounds us, and sometimes we're afraid to admit just how bad that hurts. I hope this morning to give you some sort of permission to admit just how bad it hurts sometimes, to admit that sometimes it feels like I'm in a storm. Sometimes it feels like the winds are beating against the walls of my life. Or he says it's like a scorching heat. But notice what God is. God is a stronghold. God is a shelter. God is a shade. He says it's like being out in a huge field with no shade and the sun is just beating down and it's like it's going to melt you. And all of a sudden a cloud passes between you and the sun and it just sucks all of the sun's energy up and the temperature drops and there's just this feeling of relief. That's a good word, relief. That's what we need sometimes, just relief from the storm. And he says, that's what you are to me, God. You're a stronghold, you're a shelter, you're a shade. You're like a cloud that passes between the scorching heat and your people, and you absorb its heat and you provide shelter and shade and relief to those people. If we're not willing to say how bad it hurts, that I feel like I'm melting in the sun, I feel like the storms are pounding and banging against my life, and then we do experience that relief that God provides. And Isaiah says, that's what you are to your people, Lord. You're a stronghold. You're a shelter. You're a shade. And you subdue the song of the ruthless. They are put down because you are a shelter to your people. And God is our relief. Verse 6 says, on this mountain, the Lord of hosts will make for all people a feast of rich food, a feast of well-aged wine, of rich food full of marrow, of aged wine well refined. The picture of this mountain, and on this mountain, God is going to throw a party. God is going to throw a feast, and it goes all the way back really to Isaiah chapter 2. This mountain where there's going to be the new Jerusalem, this mountain into which all the nations of the world, not just the Jewish people, but of all nations, are going to flow into God's city on this mountain, and then out of the mountain will flow God's laws and God's promises and God's blessings to all the nations of the world. Isaiah says that someday on this mountain, God is going to do that, and it's going to be the best food and the best wine, and God's people are going to experience all of his blessings. And we see this promise coming true on that first day of Pentecost, don't we? After Jesus has been crucified and buried and Jesus has been resurrected and ascended to the Father's right hand, then out of Jerusalem, the law and God's promises go forth. God's blessings go forth out of Jerusalem to all the nations of the world. And we begin to see this coming true. But there's another sense, right, in which we're still waiting for this to come true. We're still waiting for this feast day, this day of celebration, to permanently say, God's won. All of the pain's over. All the destruction is over. All the oppression is over. All of death is over. It's all past. And we just get to celebrate what our God has done. And we are still anticipating that day. In fact, I would say that every time we break bread, every time we share a meal together, we are anticipating this day. On this day in the mountain, in this new Jerusalem, eating this feast with God and his people, celebrating that death is over. All of the pain and the tears and the sorrow and the struggles are all done. And we are trusting God in the here and now, anticipating that coming day. We celebrate in the here and now, anticipating that day. And again, every time we gather together and we share the Lord's Supper, or we just eat a meal together, we're anticipating that someday every nation, this multi-ethnic family of God, is going to get together and we are going to celebrate forever. Celebrate what God has done, but I think it gets even better. Verse 7 says that he will swallow up on this mountain the covering that is cast over all peoples, the veil that is spread over all nations. He will swallow up death forever, and the Lord God will wipe away tears from all faces. And the reproach of his people he will take away from all the earth, for the Lord has spoken. Swallow up. That is a powerful image. Not only is that what God is going to do, he's going to swallow up. But I think that phrase is used because that's what death does, right? It swallows up. It swallows up the people we love. But sometimes even in grief does that to those of us that are still living. Sometimes it swallows it up and it feels like that way, maybe for some of us this morning. Some of us have felt this way for a long time. Like we've just been swallowed up by grief. Like we've been swallowed up by death. Even though we continue to live, death has swallowed up those we love, and we feel swallowed by grief. And sometimes we're scared to death to admit that. We're afraid that admitting that means that we're not being very Christian, or that we're not having very much faith. But God knows more than we give him credit for sometimes, and he sure knows just how bad death hurts, and death swallows up the ones we love. In fact, he goes on to say there's a covering. It's like a funeral veil that's over the entire world, and all people are under this veil. And that's so true, isn't it? Every single people group in all corners of the world, regardless of nationality or ethnicity or education or religion or political affiliation, every single people group is grieving. Because we're all dealing with the same problem that we've been doing so with since the fall of man. We've all been touched by death and by grief, and there's this veil, a covering over all humanity because death has swallowed up so many of us. That's reality. And until we acknowledge that reality, then we can't acknowledge the joy of the promise that God's going to swallow up the one who swallows up his people. That God will swallow up death. God will destroy death. Death will be no more than that funeral veil. God was going to swallow it up, and it will be gone forever. Again, death will be dead. That's what we need. We need permission to be angry with death. We need permission to admit just how bad death hurts so that we can embrace the joy and the promise that God will swallow up death. That there's coming a day when God's going to throw a party. God's going to have a celebration on his holy mountain in his New Jerusalem, and a day where people from every nation, tribe, and tongue will gather together and celebrate the victory that God has had over death. That veil that covers you, that feeling of being swallowed up, it will be gone and no more. Look at what Isaiah says God will do for his people. That he will wipe away the tears from all faces. That's good. John borrows that same language when he talks about the New Jerusalem. In Revelation 21:4, John says, he, being God, will wipe away every tear from their eyes. And death shall be no more, neither shall there be mourning, nor crying, nor pain anymore, for the former things have passed away. God will wipe every tear from their eye. But here's the thing with wiping away every tear. You have to give him your tears to wipe away. If God is going to wipe away our tears, well, number one, I guess we have to have tears to wipe away. But then we also have to give him those tears to wipe away. God knows just how bad death is. God knows just how bad grief is. And he wants to wipe every tear from our eyes. And we have to give him our tears to do so. We have to trust him. Sometimes maybe that's what it comes down to, isn't it? Sometimes I don't want to talk about how bad death is. I don't want to talk about how bad death hurts because maybe I struggle with maybe whether or not God will wipe away my tears. But this is the promise, right? This is the promise of Isaiah. This is the promise of the gospel, that you can trust God with your grief. And so we trust him with our grief, and then he brings relief. That wasn't an intended Johnny Cochran moment, but sometimes things rhyme. That feeling when that cloud that passes on a hot day and it gives you that moment of relief, God does that for us even right now. Those moments when you feel like you've been swallowed up and then God passes over and gives you some moments of relief, again, God is doing that now. And if we're willing to trust him with our grief, he brings relief. But in those moments when the cloud is over you and you just think, man, I wish this cloud would stay here forever and keep this heat away and keep this hurt and pain away. But you know that cloud is going to move away. But God says there's coming a day when that's exactly what you'll get. Permanent relief. No more pounding storms. No more death. And that's what we're talking about today. Why are we talking about the day of resurrection, the day that God will raise all of us from the dead? I thought today we were going to talk about Jesus' resurrection. But really, that's the whole thing, isn't it? Based on promises like this from Isaiah, 700 years later, the Jewish people of Jesus' day, they expected that someday relief was coming. Someday resurrection was coming. Someday there would be no more death. They too expected a day like that to come. They expected a resurrection for God's people. But what they didn't expect was that one of God's people would be raised in advance of all the others. And that's exactly what happened with Jesus. That God raised his son in advance of all the others so that he might be the firstborn of the dead. So that the victory that has already been claimed can be done so. That the contest between God and death has already been waged and it's already been claimed. God has already become victorious. So right now, in this moment, we trust him in Jesus. The relief of our grief isn't just a future hope, but it's also a present reality. That God has already won. And in a sense, in our baptisms, we've already been raised up with him. And so we have all the more reason to trust him with our grief. That's what we're committing to when we're baptized into Jesus. It is that we're saying because of his death, burial, and resurrection, we trust him to take away our sins. We trust him to raise us from the dead. We trust him with our grief and our tears right now and our tears forever. We trust him enough to be honest. We trust him enough to grieve. We trust him enough to lament and say, God, this hurts. And God provides relief day by day. And there is coming a day when there will be permanent relief, a day where God will swallow up death forever. God will wipe away every tear from our eye. So my encouragement for today is to celebrate what God through Jesus has done for us in relieving our grief, and look forward to a day where our grief will be forever relieved. This morning, if we can help you in any way with that, or if you want to be baptized, we'd love to visit with you, pray with you, encourage you, again, help you put Jesus on in baptism. Whatever your need may be, please come as together we stand and we sing.